Hello, lovely you. Welcome back to Naked with Nate. And that is the first change I have to tell you about today, which is that I am shifting the title from Getting Naked with Nate to Naked with Nate. And perhaps it's important that I say this at the beginning of every episode, at least for a while, is that naked is defined in this case as being open and with nothing hidden and basically speaking the truth as clearly and openly as possible. So that's what we're doing when we're getting naked with Nate. I decided that the name Naked with Nate, it rings better. It feels simpler. It's like we are getting naked and we can say that, but we're also naked already if we choose to be. I hope that you enjoyed last week's episode. Thank you to everyone who has listened and subscribed and left reviews. I read every one of those reviews and they mean so much to me. So if you haven't yet, please do go and leave one on iTunes. It's the most awesome thing. This week's episode is also slightly different from how it has been for a while, is in that this one is actually an interview. It's an interview I did some months ago with my good friend Sam Garrett. He's a wonderful musician, singer-songwriter, and just general feeler of the world. And his music is transportive and open-hearted. It has a real ability to speak to the deepest sensible soul journeys that we're all on. I don't know if sensible is the right word, but sensual, the experience we're all on through our senses and otherwise. And he's actually in the process of raising funds for his latest album. I will have a link in the show notes at nakedwithnate.com. You can go to his crowdfunder. If you want to go directly, you can just go nakedwithnate.com/Sam. And you'll find your way to his crowdfunding campaign. And there are only a few days left. So if you're hearing this, don't wait. Basically, you can get access to his music and help him to create more of what is already incredible music in the world. So do go and help that brother out. We talk about a number of different topics. For me, one of the interesting things about Sam's journey has always been how he's always sort of chosen to redirect himself towards his truth, no matter what else was happening around him outside. You'll hear the challenge of being approached by record labels when they're offering what seems like the dream for every musician of, we'll make your music, we'll record, we'll pay, we'll do all these things. And then discovering that the sort of condition on that is that you change your music or you change your look or you change your approach and you become more what will sell. And Sam, as far as I can see, has always said yes to his truth and redirected himself back towards the heart and trusted that that's the best way to go. And I have to admire someone like that. But you'll hear more about his history in our talk. It was a great honor to chat with such a good friend and someone whose music I admire and look up to so much. And it's just quite an amazing thing, actually. If one of the big things I'd like to say before we begin is that this podcast only happens in the world because of the community that supports it. There are a bunch of people who are known as the natives on Patreon, and they support pledging either really small or medium or large amounts every month in exchange for some pretty cool rewards, but primarily because they know that by pledging, they help me to keep creating, whether that's music or my podcast or anything else that I'm offering and bringing into the world. So if you feel some kind of value from what it is that you're listening to now, then please do go and check that out. Again, it'll be in the show notes, nakedwithnate.com, and you can go and decide if you'd like to pledge or if you'd like to share the page with others. This whole ship is moving forward because of us together. You may have noticed there's no advertising on this podcast. There hasn't been. There may be at some point if it makes sense, but ideally we could just keep it going forward as a community together, united in this desire to spread nakedness, to spread emotional openness and truth and just some kind of a connection in a world that seems to often be disconnecting us, and looking for those golden threads that connect us and help us to sort of heal our broken parts into more beautiful shapes than we ever could have imagined. And for me, that's really what this podcast is about. So yes, that's it. That's all from me right now in this intro. Next week, we have an incredible new thing happening, which is that my first ever live recorded podcast is going live. So that's not this week that you're listening to. It'll be the following week. I don't know what the dates are exactly, but it was recorded with my patrons live streaming video and audio, and I recorded the whole thing and made it into a full podcast episode. And it was basically the most enjoyable podcast episode I think I've ever done. And so I'm going to be doing those weekly every Sunday from now on, recording live, and then it'll go out a few weeks later, Thursday, a few Thursdays later to the public. So that's another cool thing about being on Patreon. but anyway, let's get onto it. This is my lovely friend, Sam Garrett. Any of the information we talk about, the links, the ideas, I'll link as much as I can in the show notes. So check it out, nakedwithnate.com. But for now, please enjoy Mr. Sam Garrett. Yeah. So thank you really for coming and doing this with me. I mean, we've been talking about this for a really long time. And the last person I actually interviewed for this podcast was Ricardo, was Roman. And that was already like a year ago or something. And then I've just been doing it by myself since then, but realizing like I really want other people on here. So anyway, thank you for being here. I'm so excited for us to do this together.
Yeah, man. Such a pleasure.
So you are in London these days. You've just released recently, how recently was it, your new album, Grace?
Yeah, it was only a few months ago that I released the album. But yeah, I'm currently in London, and then this is kind of like my base. And then from here, kind of going to different places. I was just in Guatemala, which was incredible. Got to play over there. I actually played with a DJ for the first time, which was something that I'm not used to at all. His name is Mose. He's like incredible.
Nice.
So we had this kind of cacao ceremony and I got to kind of jam along with him, what he was doing, some vocals, doing some guitar. But yeah, London's my home, my base. And then from here, obviously just kind of going to places wherever I'm called and wherever people ask me to go. So
nice. And I actually saw that little journey that you went on. It looked amazing. And how was it in terms of, obviously you're playing, like you're an acoustic musician. Well, that's what you're usually doing is guitar and vocals. And so how was that in terms of like following along to a rhythm and getting people to dance? Did you feel that you still connected with the audience? Like, was that still?
Yeah. In fact, it was like something that felt really natural. Like there wasn't any effort really. It was just very, at first my mind was kind of like, oh God, how's this going to go? Like, this is not what you're used to at all. Yeah. And then once I got into it, it was just like, hell yeah. I had some cacao and just kind of like got into it. And it was amazing. People responded really well. And it was an ecstatic dance. So obviously like the whole theme is kind of, you drink cacao and it's this whole kind of ceremony. Yes. And it was set in the most incredible setting. Like the view was incredible. And we're up on this kind of like mountaintop looking out over this huge lake and the other volcanoes and mountains in the distance. And I was actually pleasantly surprised. It was pretty powerful.
That's super cool. Wow. I love that. I'm actually experimenting right now with creating my first ever dance song. Like,
nice.
And it's like a straight up four on the floor, just like doof, doof, doof. And it's really fun. It's so cool because I still want to like connect with a message and make it something, but it's just so outside of anything I know. So I kind of have that sense of, oh, I don't know if this is going to work out, but hey, why not experiment with it?
I think it's important to kind of dive in just into the ocean of not knowing what is going to happen. And I think it's good to just kind of get out of your comfort zone, because for us as musicians, we're so used to just kind of getting up and playing the guitar and singing. But actually, when you jump into something with like a beat and electronics and something behind it, it's like a whole new world for us. So really powerful to be able to do that and step into that world and just still be myself, still be authentic. Like I didn't have to change myself, or I didn't feel like I had to anyway, and was able to just kind of like sing some mantras and play some kind of lead guitar, which I'm not used to also. Yeah. Which was really cool.
That's awesome.
So yeah,
that's awesome. And so tell me, with so Grace, this is like the album that you've been working on for a while.
Yes.
And you released two acoustic EPs before the full album. And I've been listening to the songs on repeat, especially because I knew we were chatting today. So I've been like going back and just th- throwing them tunes on. And I mean, it's beautiful, nice. Beautiful stuff. It's from my side, it's a bit strange in a sense, because I'm so used to just sitting next to you and hearing you play. Yeah. And then it's like, there's this whole, suddenly Sam with the band and this whole sound, but it's a vibe. I mean, it's beautiful. And so what is it that you hope to bring? What is it that you're sort of, your ideal dream for this album is in bringing it into the world, and your inspiration, and like, what is it about for you?
Yeah, I think in terms of like production, I've always wanted to record a full length album. I've always been inspired by, you know, like the Beatles, and Bob Marley is like such a huge inspiration for me. And those two are kind of like pillars for me that are holding up this musical world. And I think just being inspired by their production and their sound, and wanting to also, because for you maybe it's similar, but for me, when I'm writing a song, I already have like the rhythm in mind. I have like different ideas and different sounds that I want to kind of be expressed, but I've never really had the ability to do that, or the people around me to actually do that. And with this project, I had that. I had amazing session musicians, I had friends and people that just kind of came on board to kind of create that vision for me and make it manifest. But really the kind of message behind the album was really, I would say broadly speaking, was inspired just by my experience with Muji, who's my kind of teacher, not just him, but other teachers in the kind of yogic world. And one being Ramana Maharshi also was like a big kind of inspiration behind some of the songs and just the general feel for the album. And Grace for me really represents just that, the kind of spark of life. It kind of represents like the magic of life, the mystery of life, you know, and we're all engaged in that. And sometimes we forget about that, and sometimes we get lost in, you know, kind of mundane thinking and, you know, routines and all this kind of stuff. But grace is really that divinity, that spark of life, which is creativity as well. You know, it encompasses all these kind of aspects that make life so wonderful and so mysterious and so magical. And so it was really kind of, for me, just capturing that along with other experiences like, you know, love and falling in love and, you know, different things like that. So
what is your experience? Cause like, I know you, like where you come from and your history in terms of, but like, how did you end up as Sam Garrett, this guy singing about these things? Cause obviously like when I hear your music, what I get is that like deeper message that comes through in all the great teachings. And it's a lot of the same stuff that I'm talking about in my music, and that we're all of our friends, really all of us as humans, I feel like, are striving towards this kind of ideal. And so how did you come to that? Cause I know from you grew up in England, obviously, and then were like a punk rocker at some point in your youth. And so what happened when did you move away from like the standard English youth lifestyle and into this kind of connected vibe?
Yeah, pretty young. I mean, like growing up in the village where I grew up, like I felt a bit kind of disconnected from society as a whole. And obviously the people around me didn't really reflect what I kind of felt inside of me when I was young, that like life was much more than I was being told that it was. And yeah, I guess growing up in England, you know, like the culture is quite, if you're a man at least, like the culture is quite laddie. Yeah. And you know, you have this kind of mentality is like, you know, like woo, like drinking beer and like kind of aggressive and macho. And I wasn't any of that, you know. I was a skinny little weak guy, mm-hmm. didn't really like football, wasn't really interested in, you know, like so many video games and stuff like that. The big thing for me was like skateboarding when I was younger, and music. Like skateboarding was really an escape for me from that kind of culture and that mentality. Mm. And it allowed me, I guess, to meditate. It allowed me to stop thinking and just kind of be in the zone, be in the moment. So skateboarding was really a beautiful expression for me. And then music, I grew up with music just because of family. Like my mum and dad met in a recording studio, and music cool. was, my mum was actually a backing singer. My dad was like a bass player in all these kind of punk bands. And so I was brought up with like all this music, you know. It was the 90s, so they were like jamming Pearl Jam and Nirvana. And,
yeah.
And then I remember like seeing a video of Jimi Hendrix playing live somewhere. I can't remember where, but I must have been really young. I must have been like, you know, 6 or 7 years old, something like that. And I just remember seeing Jimi Hendrix on TV and just being like, wow, like, what is that? And just being completely amazed by it and hypnotized and just completely drawn into it. And music was just kind of, I guess it's like, I don't know, I feel like you're born with it. I feel like music for me wasn't something I necessarily had to like learn. It was just something that was in me. I was always like, from since I can remember, always singing, always like tapping and keeping rhythm and, you know, singing along to like the Jungle Book when I was really young and like things like that, you know. And then as I got older, then the punk thing came in, because I guess like, I don't know, I was just quite like a rebellious child. Like I didn't like authority, was really naughty at school and just kind of like didn't really like anybody telling me what to do. And because my dad had been a punk in, you know, when punk music was really popular in the 70s and 80s, it kind of like, I saw that, you know, I was looking at all his old photos and like he had all these old records and I was like amazed by it. I was like, wow, I want to be like that. And so I kind of got into that. And then there was kind of like a local punk scene in this town called Litchfield.
Yeah.
And you know, all these young people started to listen to kind of like, I guess like more like American punk rock, like bands like Rancid and NoFX and all this kind of stuff.
No
and
effects.
It just spoke to me. It just spoke to me because it gave me an outlet for my frustration, I guess, with like society and not really understanding the world so much. And just, it gave me an outlet to kind of do that. And then after a while, that became a bit irrelevant. And I started to kind of, I guess, like question again life and, you know, started to hear the Beatles again for like the first time and hearing harmonies and these sounds like Crosby, Stills and Nash and listening to like Neil Young, James Taylor, all this kind of acoustic music, along with all the reggae music that my dad loved. And then I don't know how it kind of happened. I guess I just started to drift away from that whole scene and just become take myself off, go into like the woods and started to kind of connect to nature. That was my first kind of thing where I would, you know, kind of be pulled away from, again, from all that stuff and just kind of be on my own a little bit. And then it was really when I just got really interested in like Buddhism and Hinduism. Even before the punk days, like when I was in high school, I was, I can actually remember one really profound moment that happened to me in RE, where we were learning about Buddhism. And the teacher, Mr. Harrison, he actually...
Mr. Harrison.
Mr. Harrison, yeah,
that's
I remember it so well. He was telling the story of Siddhartha and was saying...
Oh, wow.
You know, like this is what happened. Like he, you know, he grew up in this palace. Just told the whole story, basically, of how he became the Buddha and everything. And up until that point, I'd never realized that the Buddha was like a human being. You know, I always thought that he was this kind of like mythical figure, and I didn't realize that he was actually just a man like me. And and so I raised the question to the teacher, and I said, "So the Buddha was just like me, a human being?" He said, "Yeah." And I said, "So I can become enlightened." And he said, "Yeah." Wow. And that did something. That created a shift in me. Even though I would then go on to, you know, kind of get into punk and all that kind of stuff, it was already there before. And then it kind of came back after all the punk stuff had been kind of exhausted in me. I got kind of fed up with all of that and was just changing. You know, life is evolution, life is movement. And so I started to change. I started to listen to Alan Watts, and then from Alan Watts I found out about Ram Dass, and then from Ram Dass I found out about all these great saints from India like Maharaji and Ramana Maharshi. And then I got really into psychedelics, which opened up a whole new door and a whole new realm. And then I guess, you know, I was always writing and always playing music, and then the music just started to reflect, you know, those changes and those experiences that I was having.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And how did you, like, because the shift happened, there was like a big change. Didn't you go and live in a monastery for a bit at one point?
Yeah, right. So I went to, basically, when I started to kind of pursue music in a kind of serious way, I met this guy who became my manager in London. I was still living in the village where I grew up. And every kind of weekend, I would drive to London and play like a gig, and I would drive back home, and I would continue to work in the little coffee shop that my parents owned. And then I'd go back on the weekend and play and come back. And during that time, there were so many changes that were happening within me. But it was around this time I recorded my first EP, which is called Be Easy, released my first EP. And he was kind of like taking me to all these major record labels and trying to get me to work with all these different people. And basically, because I was changing and, like, you know, growing my hair, and I started to, you know, wanted to kind of incorporate more like mantras into my music and sing about things that, you know, I was experiencing and I was feeling. All these people that he was kind of inviting were kind of looking at me going, wow, you know, you're great. You've got so much talent, but, you know, you kind of need to like trim your hair. And, you know, I don't know what you're like singing about here, but like, they didn't get it at all, basically. They didn't get it. And so, you know, then I was going to work with producers that were going to produce like an album for me. And they just, you know, looked at my music and said, like, you know, you need to change this. You need to sing more about girls and more about, like, you know, or whatever. They were physically and literally changing my words. You know, like I would come in with my lyrics and they'd cross out the words and replace them, you know, and make it. And it was soul destroying. It was like they were taking my heart and just ripping it apart. And I got really frustrated and really upset. And basically, I just couldn't do it. You know, I had some really big opportunities, and everyone around me, like even my family and, you know, really close friends were just saying, just do it. Just do what they want you to do. You know, this is your opportunity. And I just said, no, I can't do it.
Yeah.
And I literally just walked away from the whole situation. And that's the time when I went to go and live in this ashram, which is in England, in Glastonbury. And that was just a huge shift for me, because at that moment I'd only ever like read about these things. I hadn't experienced it. I hadn't gone to live in a spiritual community or ashram or anything like that. So that was a huge turning point for me.
Wow. Yeah. Beautiful. It's so interesting to hear your story, because obviously we've been friends for a good few years now, but it's like, it's a thing with me. I've never been one to ask too much about people's history generally. I find that I'm too much in the moment having the experience with the person. So what I know of you mostly is the experiences that we've shared together. Like, that's what I know. And so it's nice to hear in some ways, because what I realize as I hear a lot of your stories is how many parallels there are between the things that I've been through in terms of like never really fitting in at school. In South Africa, there's the huge, we call them the boikies. Like there's like the, how's it, eh? Like the really strong, like drink a beer and go have a fight. And like, and I was always this like delicate, sensitive person reading books and thinking deeply about the world. And so I really resonate with so much of the things you say there.
Absolutely. And it's amazing. I just want to say that it's amazing that when we share our journeys, we see how parallel they are, you know, and many of us feel alone. And I certainly did when I was growing up. I felt really alone. I felt like I couldn't relate or respond to anything around me. I felt like you said, so sensitive. I felt like it was so brutal. This culture that I was born into was so brutal, and was just like, as I got older, I tried to fit in, you know. I would like go out drinking and all this stuff, and it just didn't make sense. It was like, this is horrible. Like, what am I doing? Like, this isn't me. I don't belong here. And I couldn't find my place, you know? And I feel that, I guess, through music and through my spiritual practices and my spiritual understanding and life has given me a place where I feel like I belong, you know? So yeah, music and my whole spiritual life really saved me in that way, because up until that, I really didn't feel like I fit in anywhere. So.
Well, let's have a song. Speaking of music, which of your songs would you like us to listen to?
I'd love us to listen to Lost in the Moment album.
Awesome. Cool. Yes. Well, maybe a little intro about just like, just in like three sentences, what the vibe is, and then we can have that song.
Yeah, really simply, this song is just about being in the present moment and not worrying about what other people think of you, not caring about anything, but just fully being in the moment, fully living.
Awesome.
In the here and the now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Here is Lost in the Moment by Sam Garrett.
Staring at the sky, clearing my mind, making room for the sunlight. Travel slow, cause I've got nowhere to go. Follow my heart, cause my heart's my home. Said I'm lost in the moment.
That was Lost in the Moment. I hope that y'all enjoyed it as much as I always do. That's one of my favorite of your songs for sure. Like I just have such a clear memory of us all in Tenerife wandering down the street and like just going crazy singing that line. And it's like such a good time. So yeah, it's really nice to hear the things come to fruition.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah, man. So one of the things I really wanted to speak about is kind of because one of what comes through in your music 100% of the time is wisdom, is enlightenment, is openness, is connection, is oneness, is all those things that we are kind of like working towards as humans. And I'm curious to hear some of your thoughts on, or some of your feelings around like where you aren't there, or are you there? Or do you feel like you are like, yes, the songs fully represent exactly how you feel, you know, 100% of the time? Or if not, then where are your shadows? Like, what are the things that challenge you? Because obviously we have the ideals and the songs represent those ideals, but then how, like if you could say maybe just one of the things that is really, that you find yourself reacting to, that you find yourself emotionally engaged in and not feeling like, oh my gosh, I really want this to be different. I'd love to hear that.
I think, you know, my music is actually a great reminder for me, because, you know, there are times and there are things where like I will become imbalanced in life, or something will come and there might be a challenge. You know, for example, like I separated from my previous partner who I have a child with. So, you know, that's been like a big challenge, trying to just kind of operate and function in that whole dynamic, you know, having a child with someone but not actually physically being with them, and being in separate places and trying to kind of make all of that work. And, you know, that raises a lot of challenges. But actually, it's my, like, it's my music that if I don't sit down and play music, then I just wallow in, you know, all of this mess and all of my mind stuff and all of that emotion. But actually, it's my music that really saves me. You know, it's when I actually sit down and just, I remember my mum saying, like, quite a few years ago, I was with a girlfriend at the time and we broke up, and I remember being really down and like feeling really depressed and sorry for myself. And I remember my mum just coming in my bedroom and just saying, you know what you need to do? You need to sit down and listen to your music. And I was like, and at the time I had such resistance to it. I was like, no, I'm not going to listen to my music. Like, but something shifted, and I did that. And I remember listening and just sitting there and being like, wow. I was kind of like thanking myself somehow. Yeah, like, but I feel like, I don't necessarily feel like the music is always coming from me as a person. You know, I feel like the music comes from something much higher, and the music comes through me. And I feel like we are channels, you know, songwriters, we're channels for that magic to come through us. And I don't always know where it comes from. You know, sometimes I'm amazed. It's like, and I've heard you say the same thing, that sometimes you don't understand what the song is about until you finished it. Right? Like you'll get to the last line of the song. And you'll be like, oh, that's what it's about. You know, and that happens to me a lot. It's like, I'll sit down with the guitar and I'll just, you know, with my phone, and I'll be writing words and I'll have a melody. And, you know, for example, I'm Alive, the song I'm Alive, like, and it was really playful. And I was in this kind of cheeky, playful mood. And then I just had this melody, like, da 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 da. And from that, it just, as I was singing, it just came, I'm alive, yes, I'm alive. And then it was like, oh, okay. And then the song just kind of took shape by itself, you know. But coming back to the point that you're making, yeah, I feel that, you know, there's many things in my personal life which are challenging. And, you know, nobody's exempt from that. You know, everybody that is born in a human body is destined to suffer and go through hardship, you know. But something that's really important to remember, that I have to remind myself, is that through hardship comes wisdom, you know, and through these experiences actually comes enlightenment, you know. And without those negative, so-called negative things, we don't actually grow, you know. My guru said that you don't grow on Cocoa Pops alone, you know. You need all the different ingredients of life, you know. And it's very true, you know. And I'm actually grateful for my suffering. I'm actually grateful for the hardship in my life, because it teaches me to become a better human being. It teaches me to become more humble, and more empathetic to other people's suffering, and more empathetic to what they're going through, because I can see myself in everyone. And I don't feel like I'm any more special or any less than anyone. I feel like we're all just here, you know. Nobody got an instruction manual on how to live life. It's like we're all just thrust into this universe, and here we are, you know. We're just on this journey, and sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad, but we have to ride those waves. And if there's something that I've taken from the teachers that I've lived with and the things that I've learned, is that, yes, these things will come, you know, there will always be highs and lows, but that what we are is beyond that, because what we are is perceiving the high and the low. You know, we're not the thoughts, because we're able to witness the thoughts. And so my practice has really become just to observe these things.
Well, I feel like that.
What were you going to say?
It just made me think of a line: "You're not your thoughts; you're beyond your culture." which song is that? Is that Lost in the Moment? I can't remember which song that is.
That's Grace. Grace.
That's it.
Yeah, the song Grace.
Yeah.
But it's like that, you know. It's like we all have these problems in life, but it's more to become. It's not easy always, because obviously when we identify it, then we get swept into that stream and it becomes our reality, you know. But that's also part of it. But the difficulty is coming back And the more that we come back, if you can have a spiritual practice, whether that's, you know, it could be surfing, it could be singing, it could be meditation, whatever it is. But the point is to really come back and just to observe these things as not to identify with them and get lost in them.
Yeah.
And and for me, that's just really important. You know, I'm not there all the time, but that is it's an ongoing practice. You know, it's something that you have to wake up and be like, okay, you know, today is a new day, and you know, things are going to come, but you know, you have to keep coming back. And for me, that's the most important thing, is to keep coming back to that observation.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just about time to listen to another song based on that little moment of inspiration. It's one of the things I wanted to respond to, you were talking about earlier, was how skating was like this, your first meditation in a sense. And I really, really relate to that with surfing, because for me, I skated a bit, but I was already a surfer, and I found that when I fell off my surfboard, I usually didn't get injured, but every time I fell off my skateboard, I got injured. But I so relate to that. And it's, I'm going through such a challenging process now, and have been for some time, with this injury or this long-term pain in my neck and my back and my shoulder. And it's this tightness that I can't seem to resolve no matter what I try. And it's this like, it's a huge challenge, and it prevents me from surfing regularly. And that's like, it's this interesting thing. It also prevents me from playing guitar regularly at the moment. And so I'm in this place of like, knowing that there is a process, and that I am learning a lot about humility and acceptance and presence. But in the moment, it's incredibly unpleasant, and that's a really challenging thing to go through. But there is this, so let's listen to a song, and then I have a question that I wanted to ask you about something that I question myself a lot in anyway. But what song would you like to play now?
Let's listen to I Believe. This song is kind of a song that was inspired by going to see a band called Nako and Medicine for the People, and the whole vibe and the energy in the room was just about like social change, spiritual upliftment, and it was just really inspiring. And the next day after the gig, I went to play in Spain. When I got off the plane, I just at the airport just spontaneously opened my guitar case and just started playing, and the riff of the song just came, and the whole song just spurred out of me at the airport in Spain. So yeah,
amazing. Cool. Well, here we go. I Believe.
I'm a lover, I was born this way. I'm a warrior, and I will make a change. Hope you're ready for what I'm about to say. You are love, yeah, and you are brave. So come with me, take a jump into this ocean. Set your heart free, throw the change into motion. We can live in peace, we can say the war is over. And now you will come to see that we will make a difference. I believe we will make a difference. I'm a Baba, I sing to Mahadev. I come to bring the truth to those who cannot see. Don't be led astray into unrighteous ways. Go back in, he said, inside your holy gate. And come with me, take a jump into this ocean. And now set your heart free, throw the change into motion, yeah. We can live in peace, we can say the war is over. And now you will come to see, we will make a difference. I believe we will make a difference. I believe we will make a difference. Whoa, yeah, we're going down, 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 down. Whoa, yeah, we're going down. Of love. So come with me. Take a jump into this ocean and now set your heart free. Throw the change into motion, yeah. We can live in peace. We will say the war is over and now you will come to see. We will make a difference, I believe. We will make a difference, I believe. We will make a difference, I know.
Rad, thank you again for another beautiful song. Yeah, it's such a gift for me. Like my hope and dream and desire for this podcast, it's kind of a new thing. I just feel like I've been so blessed with so many people who I know and admire, who I have connections with. And I kind of just want the rest of the world to know more about you. And so my first episode was with Ricardo, and then I did a few by myself because I was like, not sure how to, I thought, oh, well, maybe I could just monologue and, but my realization is like, no, I'd much rather bring light to other people who already resonate and reflect the things that I care about in the world. So yeah, thank you for coming on and doing this as a friend and as a companion. It's just wonderful.
No, thank you, brother.
So the question that I have for you, and this is I find this a very challenging question myself in my own life. And so I'm interested to hear your thoughts on it. If it's something that you don't want to like get into, that's also cool. But basically this is it. So we are both Caucasian men from kind of middle class, generally quite comfortable upbringings in a sense. Like I never had to worry about food on the table or a roof over my head. I don't think you ever did, but maybe I don't know that full story. But this is like how, so the question is basically, how do you feel, what gives you the right to talk about being the change and peace and love and all these things from a position of like a white man entitlement, which it's like this is an intense question, but this is something that I confront regularly, and I just love to hear what that brings up for you.
Yeah, no, it's a conversation I also had with another South African friend of mine, because obviously, you know, in your country there's a lot of segregation still and problems with that. But what gives me the right, I think, just being a human being, and yeah, you know, we've both come from privileged upbringings. We've both come from a place which has nourished us physically and hopefully emotionally. But the point is really for me is like none of that really matters. Like what matters is that you care and we have empathy. You know, if you see somebody suffering, it's our human reaction to want that suffering to end. And it comes from that. It comes from this basic feeling of empathy and love and compassion that is inbuilt within us, you know. And also being a creative, being somebody that has a voice that can use that voice. And actually, for me, it was a conscious decision as to what do I want to use this voice for. And like I said before, when I was working with all these people that wanted to try to change me and make me sing about things that I couldn't relate to, that was when I started to question it. It was like, well, look, I have this voice. What do I want to use it for? Sure, I can use it for fame and money and success and all of that stuff. But is that truly what I want to do it for? Is that truly why I want to do music? And I realized it wasn't about those things. What it was about was to create more awareness, create change, create more love in the world, you know, try to bridge these gaps that create segregation and separation between us, because I don't see any of that, you know. I mean, like, whether you're this color or that color or being brought up in a certain way or not, you know, all of those differences are really very minuscule to the things that are similar for us. So yeah, I feel that's what gives me the right, is just to be a human being and wanting to see the good in people and wanting to inspire, wanting to create hope and love and all the good things, you know, to see that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I hear you 100%. Like one of the things I've kind of come to in myself is the acknowledging that I can't view the world from anyone else's perspective. Realistic, like I don't know what it was like to grow up in a war-torn country where with like massive religious segregation, and I wasn't affected. Also, I wasn't like if I'd been an African brought up in South Africa, my experience might have been so different. And I have to acknowledge that I don't know what all those things feel like. So I think that's where humility becomes such a powerful tool, is the understanding that all we can do is offer what we have and know that that's not the whole story. It's not the whole truth. It's not the whole, it just is like, this is the filter through which I bring this story. And I feel like that's something that's definitely clear in what you're doing. And but I feel like it's a good question to ask, and especially as white men in a world that has been built to make us comfortable. It's such a good one to keep asking. Anyway, the thing that I wanted to, that's come up for me a few times in this talk, which is talking around, like, this is kind of a bit of a change of topic, but your relationship with the music industry, basically, is that, you know, in your youth, there were these people who were like, we want you to be this way. And if you're not this way, then you're not allowed into the club, basically. And so you chose an alter. You were like, no, that's not what's authentic and true to my own path. And you went your way, which I'm really grateful for. And I'm sure everyone who listens to your music is grateful for. But that comes with a challenge. As I know, as an independent artist for myself, I've never been approached by a record label. I've never been signed. Every ounce of my success and my ability to perform as a musician full time has come through my community of people who listen to my music. And so I kind of want to hear from you, because I know obviously you've been signed to a record label a couple of years ago, but that relationship is changing. And I want to hear like where you're at right now and where you want to go from here, and how this involves, I guess, the people who listen to your music and just all of us who love what you do. Like, how, what's up with Sam Garrett and what's coming?
Love that. Okay. So, obviously when I was just starting music, and, you know, these people were kind of coming on board and wanting to help and do all these things, but obviously wanted me to join their club and be how they wanted me to be. And I wasn't really down with that. So I left, and that took me on a journey of really self-discovery, because at that point I didn't really know who I was, you know, and I'm actually grateful for that. I'm grateful for those times, because it really helped me to go inward, because I think I was looking for myself in terms of how other people perceived me and what other people thought of me. And in that industry, when I got into that, it was completely, like I said before, soul destroying, like it completely broke me. And so, I went to live in the ashram, and, you know, spent quite a long time there and lived there for quite a while. And I really just went there to give up music. You know, at that point I was done. I said to my family, you know, I'm finished with this. Like, if this is what music has come to, like, I don't want anything to do with it. And so music was not even on the back of the list. Music was gone from my life at that point. Wow. And that was it. I'd gone to become like a monk kind of thing, you know, and live a kind of celibate life in this place and forget about everything. So when I got there, I didn't take a guitar. I just took like a backpack with some clothes and books and stuff, and got there and kind of showed up and was living as a monk in the temple, and waking up, you know, very early in the morning, and would go into the temple. We'd like read from some books and sing and chant and have meditation, and we'd have breakfast, and then you kind of do chores throughout the day, you know, whether it's gardening or, you know, making beds or whatever it was, cleaning the temple. And in this time, I remember that in the morning, I'd go into the temple in the morning, and there was a guitar in the corner of the room. And I would go into the temple, and while everyone was sat silently with their eyes closed, I had my eyes open looking at the guitar. And it was something that was really obvious to me, and obviously really apparent that I was doing this. And I kind of, you know, for a few days, would just kind of like shrug it off, like, no, you know, close your eyes, go back to meditation, focus on whatever. But it wouldn't leave me. It was like almost like the guitar or music in general was like, don't leave me. Like, I need you. Like, let's get back together. You know? Like, why have you broken up with me? And so And then, yeah, and then after some time, then I was like, do you know what? I'm just going to pick up the guitar. And the songs that I wrote while I was there was the songs that were on my second EP that I called Namaste. So We Are One, Belong, Higher Than the Mountains. All those songs were the songs that I wrote while I was there. And I just knew from that point on, I was like, this isn't my life. Like, I'm not supposed to like shut myself off from the world. Like, I have a gift and I have a voice and I should use that. And I'd found, I guess, an identity, or I'd found a sense of self within, you know, this newfound freedom from, you know, the industry, like not working and then going to this ashram. And it was kind of two extremes, you know. It was kind of like you had the industry on one side and on the other side you had this, you know, very extreme celibate life of becoming a monk. And the one thing that really put me off is that they wanted me to shave my hair, and I was really not down for it. And they, you know, they kept saying, because I was young and, you know, I obviously showed a lot of devotion and interest in their tradition,
yeah,
you know, it was almost on a daily basis they were trying to kind of convert me or get me to kind of become a full monk, you know. They're like, so when are you gonna become a devotee? It was like every day it was like this question,
when and are I you was, going the full monk.
right and I was really kind of again changing, coming back to music and you know, kind of like the Buddha says, the middle way, you know. It was like that for me. It was like you had on one side the industry, on the other side this kind of celibate monk lifestyle. In the middle you had music as this path that I could share this wisdom and knowledge with others. And so that's when I really fell back in love with music. And then it took me on a journey. Then I moved to London. My brother was living there. I moved to London, and that's when I met all of you guys. I came to Inspiral. And I met you guys, met Roman, met Tom, Nio, everyone. And I just started to work at Inspiral. You know, that's how I met you. We did the open mics. And for me, at that point, music wasn't, again, it wasn't serious. It wasn't like, okay, I'm going to be famous. It was just about the love of it. And that for me was such an incredible time for all of us, because there was no care in the world about industry or anything. It was just like, we're playing music because we love it, and we're playing music because it serves a purpose in our lives and for others. And the feeling that that gives to you and to others is so satisfying and so beautiful and so whole. And and I really just fell in love again with music. And then some years later, then, you know, I kind of like just played music, did what I did. There was another opportunity I had with a producer, and kind of fell through again, because I think of the kind of spiritual tone to my music, kind of fell through. And
it's funny that is something that would turn anyone off. That it's like, oh my gosh, you're singing about like love and connection and open-heartedness. We can't go there. It's like, who are the people? Who is your market? Like, who's your audience? The people who don't want to hear about being a human. I mean, anyway, that's my own. Just continue.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I feel like that's going to lead me into the next part. But yeah, basically it was that again for me. It was that it was like another confirmation of like, wow, like this industry is really does not want to support conscious music that opens people's minds and their hearts and connects them. And it was a really big turning point. And again, I was just like, you know, I'm done with the industry. Like, I'm just going to do it my own way. And was obviously inspired by you, because you were doing your thing and you had Patreon. And it was like, I was kind of like, yeah, you know, I'm just going to do it myself. And then some years later, like up until just a few years ago, I met again, this guy got in touch with me. Basically, he's a rapper called Sway. I did a song on his album many years before. This is when I was with my first manager, when he was taking me to meet all these industry people. And he put me in touch with Sway and said, you know, he wants someone to come and record on his album. Would you be interested? And I was like, yeah, of course, why not? Went down, thought nothing of it, really liked him, really nice guy. We had some pretty cool conversations about just kind of, you know, the industry and politics. I realized he was a very conscious guy, like very awake, but kind of within the industry, knew how it all worked. And then I went off, did my thing. I went to live in India. I went to India, traveled in India, came back to London. And he just sent me a message just out of the blue, just like, hey, Sam, I've been following your travels. I just want to say that I really love what you're doing, and it'd be great to work together at some time. And then after he got back in touch with me and basically said, look, you know, I've been given this deal from Island Records to sign up-and-coming artists, and I want to work with you. And on the basis that, number one, I don't want to change anything about you, whether that's your image or your style or whatever, and you have complete creative control, you know, so do has to come from you first. Like, it has to have your say before we do anything. Wow. So that gave me great confidence, because obviously in the past, my experience with the industry was like, you know, you have to do it our way. And if you don't do it our way, there's, exactly. So, so then I signed a contract with them. This was just over 2 years ago. I signed a contract with them on the basis that we'd do like a development deal. We'd record an album and they'd release and promote that album. And then, so just kind of got into that. And then the recording took way longer than it should have done. It was all kind of mishmashed because it was like we're recording in Nottingham. We'd recorded the whole album, but then it was being mixed. This guy in London, and you know, there was loads of it was like couldn't kind of get it together, and it just took way, way too long.
Yeah.
And even though I feel like they had so much faith and so much belief, like every time I would see them, they were just hyped about like the album. They were just like, this is huge, like this is so big, and they were so hyped about it that it just gave me so much faith and encouragement in the whole process. And so I just kind of stuck with it, even though it was taking way too long, and nothing was kind of really moving in that way, and I was kind of feeling a bit stagnant and a bit held back, but kind of, you know, stuck with it. And then finally the album came out, but there was no like promotion, you know, and they kind of had a big setback again, because even though they're within the industry, all the people, all their contacts that they were sending the music to were all saying, you know, we can't do anything with this, you know, like this isn't what we're used to, because again, it's industry standard, you know, you're coming up against the same people. So even though I had this kind of opportunity to again go back into the industry and expose my music to a much larger amount of people, you still had to then go to the same people that I was dealing with in the first place for them to actually do anything with the music, and they didn't want to do anything with it. So that was frustrating, obviously, and I was really upset about it, and it was annoying, but I just came to the conclusion, you know what, like it's not for me, you know, like I'm not into this, and
It feels like there's almost, it's like this pattern that keeps playing out, and each time it takes you a little bit deeper or further along the journey, you know, where it's, and I've had like this, not in the same way, but a very similar experience around realizing, knowing that I loved music and loved lyrics and loved singing my songs that came from like very heartfelt and honest and open. And then realizing, you know, every few years having like another unpeeling of the layer and seeing like, oh wow, like that's what the actual industry is. And that doesn't feel at all like what I feel with my music and how I want to connect with the people who listen to it. And it's like this, how do I make that work if it doesn't fit into the model that I've been told is the only model that a musician has to choose, that you have to do it this way. Anyway, I hear it like, it just seems to be this pattern that comes up again and again, which brings us to where we are now. So where are we now?
Yeah. So now it's like the feeling is like, at least Grace is out, the album is out, but I'm going to part ways with the label and with my management and the whole team and just kind of go on my own again. And inspired by you and Roman and a few other people, I've been looking into Patreon and also, you know, just seeing that like that's what kind of aligns with my core values and why I want to do music, whereas the industry doesn't, you know. And I feel like it's really time, this year just feels for me to live in alignment with my core values in every aspect of my life. So that's, you know, what I consume, what I buy, how I live my life, and also like creatively and how I sustain myself. So Patreon just seems to me to be the most amazing way, because it's directly connecting to the people that love what you do.
Yeah.
And in return, they support you by you giving something of value, something of worth in their life, something yeah. that may just even help them get through a day when life is tough and yeah. it's dark and it's challenging, and all they need is just, you know, I know for me that when I was growing up, and I'm sure for you it's the same, that music was an escape. Music was a way. It was like, you know what, I can just go and chill with Bob for a few hours. You know, it was that thing where it really made you just come back to a place where it was like, you know what, life isn't so bad. And even if it is, at least these people understand me.
They get it. What I'm going yeah, through. They're there with me.
They like, get it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Oh man. I mean, this is, so I think one of the reasons I've been so excited about you joining Patreon, well, that I've been saying to you for so long, is like, because I feel like your music and is so much, it has to stay unadulterated. Like it has to stay pure, because yes. free of the agenda of a company whose primary goal at the end of the day is to make a profit. Like that's not bad. That's how business yeah. is. That's just the reality. Observe the reality as it is. That's just how it is. And so when that comes head to head with someone like you or someone like me or these heartfelt, like where really our primary purpose and desire in the world is to share more of like the goodness and the connection and the realness of being human. How can those two make peace when there's a company that's like, we need to make huge profits this year, and you're like, I just want to connect with people authentically. It's like, how do they?
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So yeah, for me, like, yeah. there's actually one of my, something you said a minute ago about how the value exchange works, where they pledge whatever they choose on a site like Patreon or something, and in exchange they get that, they know that they're bringing more of that comfort, that healing, that medicine into the world for themselves that they can use when they need to. And a prime example of that for me is actually one of my patrons who's been one of my top patrons for, and I mean that only in the sense that she's been pledging a lot of money monthly for a long time. To mm-hmm. me, like the fact that anyone would pledge any amount is incredible. But this woman has been very engaged mm-hmm. and very like connected with my art for many years. And I wrote to her, I wrote to a bunch of my top patrons in one of my down dips where I just felt like there's nothing that I'm providing that is worth anything. Why are these people supporting me? Why are they pledging $50 or $100 a month? What is the point? And I wrote to them they all replied with beautiful things. But my basic question was, how can I give you enough value to fulfill, to like meet the value that you give to me? And this woman wrote back to me, and I've never met her. She's in her 70s, I think 60s or 70s. She lives in Australia. And she wrote back and she said, If I think that my support gives one other person the experience that I get from listening to your music, then it's absolutely worth it. And that's yeah. it. You can't argue with absolutely. Something like that. I mean, like I get so emotional every time I yeah. say that, because it's like, wow, that's such a different experience to everything you've just said about record labels and the money and you got to do this and you have to do it that way. It's like, this is just someone going, your music has brought me joy. Here is some money so you can keep making that music. Anyway, carry on with your story. Sorry, I got all excited there.
No, it's beautiful. And something that really excites me about Patreon is also that, you know, not only are they supporting you, but they're helping you to further, you know, share that music with other people, you know? Yeah. So they're really, it's not like this separate thing, like they're helping in such a big way, because you're actually helping to that music to, you know, to reach many, many more people. And also to be funding you to you know, be able to record more music and to yeah. be able to travel and tour and, you know, to actually connect directly to these people. So they have like such a, they become the record label, you know, they become the people that are funding you to be able to do not only what you love, but something which is obviously going to create immense wealth and joy and just abundance in people's lives, because yeah. you're creating to that. I'm really excited and really just grateful for just this opportunity, you know, with the record labels. Again, you know, it's all affirmation, it's all confirmation.
Yeah, it's true, you know, it's like we can only
from these things, you know, as they come. Like for me, my experience within the industry has taught me that I actually don't want to be in the industry, that I actually, you know, want to be self-sufficient. I want to be in control of my own life and my own art and my own craft, and to be able to share that with people in a very direct way is really important for me now. So yeah, I'm very excited.
I'm very excited too. And that's kind of all I had to chat about today. I feel like I've had a really enjoyable chat. So thank you for sharing your story. If people want to find you, like I'm going to have little show notes and stuff on my website. So where would you say is a good link for them to have to kind of connect with you online, either your music or just you as an, like the journey that you're on or both? Where would you say?
Yeah, I think for music, I have a SoundCloud. All my social media is one thing. So it's Sam Garrett Music.
Perfect.
So it's all one. So you can go to SoundCloud. You can go to my YouTube is actually different. My YouTube is Sam Garrett Videos, which is a bit of a shame. But yeah, but Instagram, Facebook, you know, all of it. And I would love to hear from anybody. You know, like the joy for me about doing what I do and what we do is to actually connect directly with people and actually realize that we're not so different after all. And there's nothing really to be afraid of. Like we're all in this together, and it's important to connect. It's important for the family to come back together. And that's really why we're doing what we're doing, you know, is to bridge that gap and to really come back together and to recognize that we are very similar. You know, we all have doubts. We all have fears. We all have things that are challenging in life, but we're not alone in that. And I think we can find solace by coming together and helping each other.
Beautiful. I feel like that's exactly why the Lyrical Nomads as a kind of collective or community or gathering exists, is because all of us, that was what we saw in one another, was this desire to bring connection into the world, to be connected in a way that is authentic and sincere and like doesn't have any of the bullshit that comes from the whole like self-based, I don't know. Anyway, you know what I mean? But like, I'm really grateful to know you and to know the crew, because I feel like together some of the things that we have done and I've watched you guys do are some of my favorite things that happen in the world. So it's awesome. And let's have a song to say farewell. What is the final song to bid these wonderful listeners goodbye on this day?
So the final song is Shrines, and it's also from my new album. And the song was written in India while I was in India, and had a kind of profound experience where I was reading a book by, it's actually by David Godman, but it's about Ramana Maharshi, this great saint that lived in India. And as I was reading the book, Ramana was saying that really you don't need to go to the temple to find God, that God is within you. God is your very own self, you know. And it just really spoke to me. I thought it was beautiful. He was also like quoting Jesus, saying, you know, the truth can be summed up in the words of Jesus when he said the kingdom of heaven is within you. And that was one of the first times that I really made the connection between kind of Christ and these other wisdom traditions of humanity. And it was literally I think it was either later that day or the day after, but I went into the town where I was staying, and there was a big festival, and all these people were lined up to go into the temple. And I just remembered what he was saying, you know, that God isn't in the temples, it isn't in the churches, it's within your own heart. And I just sat pleasantly watching it was beautiful anyway, what the expression that was happening. And, you know, they were dressing up all these cows and all these kind of things and colors everywhere. It was amazing. But I just remembered his words, and it just really spoke to me. And I just felt really touched by it. And I wrote this song, and that's really what the song is about, that the shrine is really within your heart. It's really within your own self. And you don't need to travel to India or go to these, you know, Himalayas or anything to find what you're looking for, because what you're looking for is yourself, which is always here, because you are yourself. You know, you can't find yourself anywhere else but yourself. So and that's really my encouragement, is for people to take the time, whether it's 10 minutes, 5 minutes every day, just to sit and to look and to really come to that understanding and that seeing within your own self. And there will be resistance towards that, because we're naturally conditioned to do things. You know, if there's a problem, we need to get up and fix it and do something. And so this is a little bit different, because, you know, these teachers are saying, just don't do anything, just sit and look and observe. And the more that you do this, the more that you can get into a habit of that, you start to find incredible, beautiful things within you, universes inside of yourself. And so, yeah, this song is Shrines.
Yes. Thank you, brother. It is. It's just, correct me if I'm wrong, but is this the song, You Are the Self, You Are What You're Looking For?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
That's definitely one of my, like, I use that line a lot in my own thoughts and when I'm speaking with people, and it's such an applicable line in so many situations. So yeah, thank you for your music. Thank you for being here. And I hope whoever's listening has gained wisdom and joy and light and love out of this. And please enjoy this final song with the beautiful Sam Garrett. And do go check out the show notes as well to get all the info that you need around how to find more of this guy's amazing musical vibes. And that's it. Please enjoy Shrines.
Sha, sha. Well, you told me, yes, you told me, yes, you told me, yes, you told me. For the ones who see and the ones who get left behind, with both eyes open, your heart becomes a shrine. For the ones who teach and the ones who go to war, you are the self, you are what you're looking for. So look inside and find the heart of life. Oh, and look to see what's hidden. Christ,
that you enjoyed that final song from my lovely friend Sam Garrett. It was a really blessed conversation to be able to share in with him. It was already quite some time ago, so I'm glad that I finally have the opportunity to share this with you. There are like some epic show notes. He spoke about a lot of various ideas and concepts and teachers and things and lessons and learnings and songs and lyrics. And I have a full page of stuff I was inspired by that I'm going to throw into the show notes. So nakedwithnate.com is where you will find that. If you'd like to go straight to his crowdfunder, he hasn't launched a Patreon as yet, but he is doing a crowdfunding campaign for his next album, which has got some bonus songs on it. And it's Sam Garrett. It's beautiful music. You're going to feel happy to go there. So you could just go straight to nakedwithnate.com/Sam, and that'll take you straight to his crowdfunding campaign. I will also obviously link to that in the show notes. That is all for now. Next week, we have the very special first episode that was recorded to a live online studio audience of my patrons. And in it, I talk about a psychic and being in love and a broken heart and how I became a musician and all of the crazy. It's got a lot of crazy, wild stories in there. And then I also answer questions that were asked live by my patrons during the recording. So it's a new style. It's a new way of doing this podcast. And I love it. And I'm going to keep doing it. It's going to be every Sunday. Moving forward, I'll be live streaming that out and then releasing those episodes a week or two or three later to the public. So either way, you can get your hands on it. But if you'd like to get your hands on it super quick, live and in real time, then do check out my Patreon page. The link will also be in the show notes, or you can go to patreon.com/Nate Maingard. Other than that, I'm your host, Nate Maingard. You are a magnificent human. Thank you for being here. I appreciate the heck out of you. Thanks for getting naked with Nate. I'll see you next week.
Try to see my point of view, echoes of another you, saving up your indiscretions. I've seen the wild untamable, more than less unshakable, shaper who has named me shameless. So leave me be, I'm tempted. Every rule I've bended, I shake the weight and break the hate with everything that I am made of. Try to see my point of view, echoes of another you, saving up your indiscretions. I've seen the wild untamable, more than less unshakable, shaper who has named me shameless. I'm looking for a friend to get me out of my head. This chamber of reflections is just paved with all my good intentions. Try to see my point of view, echoes of another you, saving up your indiscretions. And I've seen the wild untamable, more than less unshakable, shaper who has named me shameless. So if you are less stressed, let us put this to the test. For who is love when loving not those who have not loving God? La da 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 da, la da 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 da. Try to see my point of view, echoes of another you, saving up your indiscretions. And I've seen the wild untamable, more than less unshakable, shaper who has named me shame.